Let's turn in our Bibles to Judges chapter 16 this morning. Judges chapter 16 as we continue our way through the book of Judges. And we come now to the final chapter concerning the life of Samson. Although this won't be the final message concerning the life of Samson. We're going to break Judges chapter 16 into two parts for our series. And Samson is an enigma to me. He's a strong man who is incredibly strong, but he is also weak. He's a man who has incredible physical strength that I believe was miraculously given to him by God. Therefore, we could say the hand of God was upon him in evident manner. And yet he was a man who was ruled by his lust. For us, the life of Samson is a tremendous study because it reminds us of where sin can take us and how powerful lust can be when we do not submit ourselves to the will and the ways of God. Judges chapter 16 is the sad demise of this man, Samson, who up until now has been able to keep an even keel. Despite the fact that he's ruled by his lusts, God has been using him for about 20 years as a judge over the people of Israel. There has been a little bit of deliverance from the Philistine oppression because of Samson, although as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, that deliverance was only individually through Samson. And it was not the type of deliverance which involved all the people standing up against the Philistines. In fact, full deliverance from the Philistines would not come until several generations later under the reign of King David. As we think about this man Samson, though, we think about wasted potential. We think about the sadness of a man who was led astray from what God had in store for him and went off into the tall weeds of lust and was choked out. We find a man who ends up, in a sense, as we look at the end of his life, in a very sad way. And I think, Samson, it didn't have to end this way. Samson, you knew better. Samson, God could have allowed you to be victorious, but Samson was a man who was ruled by his lust. This morning, I want to speak to you for a few moments about a man who was defeated by his lust. Here's a man who has the power of God upon him for the purpose of afflicting the enemy, but he is unable to control his fleshly impulses, and he is dominated by his desires for sexual gratification. Now, the story of Samson and Delilah is well known. It's the subject of operas and plays and movies and books, most of which get it all wrong. In the Bible, it's very clear what is happening. And as we examine this story in Judges chapter 16 about Samson and Delilah, we see very powerfully shown in these pages the danger of being defeated by one's lust. Would you direct your attention there to Judges chapter 16 and verse number 1. The Bible says, Then went Samson to Gaza and saw there an harlot and went in unto her. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson is come hither. And they compassed him in and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning when it is day, we shall kill him. And Samson lay till midnight and arose at midnight and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders and carried them up to the top of an hill that is before Hebron. And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and said unto her, entice him, and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee every one of us 1,100 pieces of silver. And Delilah said to Samson, tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lieth, and wherewith thou mightest be bound to afflict thee. I don't think I used the right voice for that. You imagine it. And Samson said unto her, if they bind me with 7 green withes that were never dried, then shall I be weak and be as another man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her 7 green withes which had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now there were men lying in wait, abiding with her in the chamber, and she said unto him, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he brake the withes as a thread of tow is broken when it toucheth the fire. So his strength was not known. And Delilah said unto Samson, behold, thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith thou mightest be bound. And he said unto her, if they bind me fast with new ropes that were never occupied, then shall I be weak and be as another man. Delilah therefore took new ropes and bound him therewith and said unto him, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And there were liers in wait abiding in the chamber, and he brake them from off his arms like a thread. And Delilah said unto Samson, hitherto thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Tell me wherewith thou mightest be bound. And he said unto her, if thou weavest the 7 locks of my head with the web. And she fastened it with the pin and said unto him, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awaked out of his sleep and went away with the pin of the beam and with the web. And she said unto him, how canst thou say I love thee when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these 3 times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart. And said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he hath showed me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand, and she made him sleep upon her knees. And she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass. And he did grind in the prison house. I don't know if there's any sadder words in all the Bible than the phrase at the end of verse 20, and he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. What happened in Samson's life? How do we see Samson getting to where we find him at the end of the chapter? Here we see a progression of lust in his life, and of course it didn't begin here in Judges chapter 16. We know from the story of Samson that he has been a man ruled by his lust for a long, long time. He's become very comfortable with his lust, and he's happy with the fact that his lust seems to coexist with the power of God which is upon him. Which I want to point out to you, just because it appears that you have the blessing of God in your life does not mean that you are a victorious Christian. Sometimes God is good and gracious to us, and he blesses our lives in spite of ourselves. And so we have to be careful. But sometimes people think, well, I have the blessing of God on my life. Look, all that God is doing. Therefore, I must be able to get away with sin. Mark this down this morning. There is not a single person within the sound of my voice who can get away with sin. Sin always has consequences. I want you to notice several things from this passage. First of all, my attention was drawn to the design of the enemy. The design of the enemy. The enemy is represented by the Philistines. And of course, the Philistines hate Samson. They have good reason to hate Samson. He's killed thousands of them. He has, in some measure, pulled the nation of Israel back from their oppression. They have some reasons that they don't like Samson. They'd like to destroy him. Now for 20 years, Samson has judged over Israel and has given some deliverance from the Philistines. And in chapter 16, verse 1, we find Samson going down to Gaza, which was one of the cities that belonged to the Philistines down in the south part of their country. And he saw an harlot there, and he went in unto her. And when they knew that he was there, look what it says in verse 2. They compassed him in and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning when it is day, we shall kill him. Here's what the enemy wanted to do to Samson. The enemy wanted to kill Samson. The enemy wanted to take his life. And you might say, well, naturally, they were his physical enemies. A little bit farther down in verse 5, after that incident there in Gaza, then he goes and he meets Delilah and he begins to spend time with her. In verse 5, the lords of the Philistines found out that Samson was going to Delilah, and they came and approached Delilah and they said, we want this man. We want to destroy him. The word that they use there in verse 5 is that we may bind him to afflict him. We want to capture this man. And Delilah, we want you to find out the secret of his strength. We will pay you a lot of money to let us know what the secret of his strength is, because we want to destroy this man. You say, okay, Pastor, it's nice. He has an enemy that wants to destroy him. Here's what I want you to understand. Christian, you have an enemy that wants to destroy you. There is an enemy that is on the prowl that is trying to take advantage of you. And many Christians are living as if they do not have an enemy. We are living in a war zone. We have an enemy that is after us, that is actively seeking to steal and to kill and to destroy. And understand that the enemy wants to bring ruin in your life. I find many Christians, sadly, are living in such a way that you could hardly convince them that they have an enemy. It's like they're walking around and there's no threat to them. There's no problem. And they simply do not seem to understand that the enemy of their souls is trying to bring destruction. Do you know that if the enemy cannot get to you, he'll go after your family? If the enemy cannot get into some area of your life where you're strong, he will look to exploit some other area of weakness. He's very much aware of your weakness, and he is constantly looking to use your fleshly appetites as his ally in bringing destruction in your life. Do you know this morning that you have an enemy who wants to destroy you? Please understand that. Please be sure that you know that there's an enemy. Now, I don't want you to go out of the auditorium this morning and start looking behind every bush for Satan, thinking he's going to jump out in the dark and get you. No, he doesn't work like that. He transforms himself into an angel of light. Oftentimes, the temptations that confront us are in the most unexpected times. Even in the midst of doing the will of God and following after his purposes, we'll find that Satan will confront us. Why? Because he wants to destroy our lives. He wants to tear us apart. He wants to destroy families. He wants to rip apart churches. He wants to destroy individual lives. He wants to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And what is unique about this, and what is really interesting to me, is that many people think that God is the one who is out to destroy their lives, and that following the ways of the world will make them very happy. And it's actually the other way around. It's completely the opposite. But if you pay much attention to what is going on in our world, you know that most of the world is completely convinced of that lie. And they really believe that to follow God would destroy their life, and following after their own desires is going to make them truly happy. Now, Satan is represented here by the Philistines, and it's intriguing to me that the Philistines knew what Samson's weakness was. He's a strong guy, but they knew he liked women. And they were onto it. They were paying attention, and they said, you know, sooner or later, we know that Samson is going to come looking for another Philistine woman, and when he does, we're going to get him. Your enemy knows your weaknesses. Your enemy knows the things that you may cover over so that other people can't see, but he's very much aware of what those weaknesses are. And he's good at probing until he finds them, until he finds an open door. The design of the enemy is to destroy. That is why it is so important for us that we would be vigilant and watchful of our enemy. But we see not only the design of the enemy, then we see in Samson's life that he really played into this, and we see his disdain for the limitations that God had put upon him. You see, God had told Samson some particular things that he was to adhere to. Certainly, it was expected that Samson, as a judge of Israel, would be a man who would follow the law of God. And yet, what kind of disdain do we see in Samson's life? Well, there in verse 1, Samson goes to Gaza, which is deep into Philistine territory. He goes into the city, he finds a prostitute, and he says, I'm going to spend the night with this woman. Can you imagine, like, what is this guy thinking? Doesn't he understand what he is doing? Doesn't he realize how he is violating God's law? How he is disrespecting the name of God? How he is putting himself in a place of danger? But here's what I want you to understand. Sin makes you stupid. When you start sinning and giving in to lust, the lie that Satan tells you is, it's not going to hurt you. It's happened to lots of other people, but it's not going to happen to you. You're going to get away with it. Listen, it's not going to affect you. You're a Christian. You're a man of God. You know, this can't touch you. That is a lie of Satan. But Samson had complete disdain and disregard for the restrictions of God. In that case, of course, we find there in Gaza that they waited for him, intending to kill him. And in verse 3, Samson evidently knew what was going on. And then he tired of the game. He got up at midnight. He went out of the house. He went to the gates of the city. Now, the gates of the city, you know, this is not like a door. This is a gate. And this is, you say, how could he do this? This is miraculous. He comes to the gates of the city. He pulls them out of the ground, puts them on his shoulders, and carries them 40 miles away and puts them on top of a hill. And you say, what was that all about? I think that was Samson saying, you guys think you can get me? You can't get me. You're not strong enough to get me. Now, realize the strength that he has is from God. But Samson is kind of, he's sinning with impunity and feeling like he can get away with it. And this is how we sometimes act. As Christians, we kind of flirt with sin, play with sin, mess around with sin, and we think, it can't get me. It can't bother me. It could never affect me. And we're lying to ourselves. We find then, a little bit later in verse 4, Samson, sometime after that, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. Interesting, the valley of Sorek was again a place where grapes were grown. One of the primary restrictions that God had placed upon Samson was that he could not have the fruit of the vine. And yet he frequented places where grapes were grown. We see this over and over again in his life. And I believe there's something that God is telling us in that, in Timnath, and now again in Sorek. He is frequenting places that belong to the Philistines, that are places where grapes are grown. And it's like he's saying to God, the rules don't apply to me. I can do whatever I want. I can live however I want. It's not going to affect me. It's not going to bother me. I can do my own thing. Again, he falls for a Philistine woman. Again, it is clear that his lust is in the driver's seat. Again, we see that Samson, instead of fleeing from temptation, he is running headlong into temptation. Now, let me just pause for a second and say this. We become so calloused to sin sometimes that we think that sin will not affect us. And let's be honest for a moment. Sin is all around us in our society. It is trumpeted in our face. We are exposed to sin all the time. If you are a person who spends a lot of time viewing entertainment, entertainment is full of sinful worldly philosophy. It's all around us. You go out into the world and it's there, and we become somewhat callous to sin. But we get to the place where we start to think about sin as if it's not really that big of a deal. As if, well, it would never affect me. I would never do that. What happens, sadly, is that while we're saying, I would never do that, we're engaging in other things that we're excusing and saying, it's okay, I can get away with that. Now, Samson is this weird mix of he's giving in to lust while he's exhibiting the power of God. And Samson let that go to his head, and he began to think about himself, well, I've got this power. And later we find, what does he say? He says, well, it's the hair. If you cut the hair, then I lose my power. And certainly that's what happened to him. But it wasn't the hair that gave him his power. It was God who gave him the power. And he had already violated every other area of the Nazirite vow except for the hair. It was like that was the one thing he was clinging to. That was the one thing that he was hoping to hang on to, and then he let that go. But Samson shows such an utter disdain for the restrictions of God. You know, many Christians feel this way. When the Bible says, thou shalt not, or the Bible says, this is not wise, or the Bible says, this is what you ought to do, many people feel like, why is God putting this burden on me? Why is God telling me how to live? Why is God telling me how to operate my life? Do you think that maybe God has your best interest at heart? That maybe God is trying to protect you from something that you think you can conquer on your own? Certainly, Samson felt that he could get away with this. And he had some disdain for the things of God and disdain for the power of God. And so he comes and he begins to have this relationship with Delilah. I don't want you to think about this relationship with Delilah as platonic. I don't want you to think about it as scriptural. There's no sense in which Samson is behaving in a way that a man of God ought to behave. He is enjoying the pleasures of sin for a season. And Delilah, as we see her pictured here in Judges chapter 16, is, I believe, such a tremendous example for us, a demonstration of what sin does in our lives and how sin is at work in our lives. Now, obviously, she's a real person, and she is at work in Samson's life trying to get something out of him. And this leads us to the third thought in the message, and that is the deceitfulness of sin. Because sin lies to you. Did you ever think about why people sin? Not people. Why do we sin? What are we trying to get out of that sin? I think sometimes about, well, why would somebody do that? Well, there's all kinds of reasons that people sin, but mostly it comes back to making themselves happy, meeting their own needs, pleasing themselves. So at the root of what is sin is selfishness. It is, I'm gonna do my own thing in my own time. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to live my own life, and I'm going to please myself. And sin is deceitful. You know, all the way back in the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3, we find the very first lie that was told about sin. And there in the garden, Satan told Adam and Eve, God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, ye shall be as gods. Listen, God is holding something back from you. If you go and eat that fruit, then God knows that you're going to become like gods. You're going to become like him. He's trying to withhold something from you that you really need and that you really desire in your life. And he convinced them. Now, what he didn't tell them was that there were going to be severe consequences for that sin. God had told them. They knew about it, but they believed the lie of Satan. And this is exactly what happens in your life and mine. Satan comes. He does not say, here's sin. And if you take this, it's going to ruin your life. He says, doesn't this look wonderful? Come on, you know you want it. It's not going to hurt you. Go ahead, take a little, just a little bit. You don't have to take much, just a little bit. It's no big deal. And you can get away with it. And I know that preacher, he says it's going to hurt your life. It's not going to hurt your life. You don't have to listen to the Bible. Come on, it's not going to be so bad. That's how he tempts us, isn't it? Are you all awake this morning? Have you ever heard this in your mind? Have you ever heard these lies and struggled with sin in your life? This is what's going on in Samson's life. So he's here with Delilah. And in verse 6, Delilah starts talking to him. She says, oh, Samson, honey. Oh, you're so strong. You're such a hunk. Oh, I just love you, Samson. You're my favorite guy. I'm so glad that you're spending time with me, Samson, baby. Tell me, why are you so strong? How did you get so strong? And Samson, you know, I know it's not all in there. Don't you think that's how she was talking to him? She wasn't like, just tell me the secret of your strength. She is laying it on because she wants him to tell her something. And Samson, he's like, yeah, I am. I'm pretty cool. Pretty strong. You know, if they just take 7 cords, tie my arms up, I'm done. And Delilah's like, okay, 7 cords. Now, I want you to stop for a minute before we go on with the story. And just think, what is this woman doing? Well, what does she want? Money. The lords of the Philistines came to her and said, we are going to make you fabulously wealthy. Every one of them is going to give her 1,100 pieces of silver. If she can convince Samson to give her the secret of his strength. So she stands to be an extremely wealthy woman if she can do this. And she's enjoying every minute of it. And I want you to know Samson is enjoying every minute of it. This is like a cat and mouse game that's going on. And both of them are manipulating each other to get what they want out of the other person. Samson wants to have pleasure with her. And she wants the money that she's going to get if she can betray him. And they're both trying to use each other. There's a lot of manipulation going on. Do you know that the world is full of people who are willing to manipulate you to get what they want out of you? Some of you young men ought to pay attention to this. Some of you young ladies ought to pay attention to this. There will come along people who will say the things that you want to hear so that they can get the things that they want from you. Be careful. Be careful. And it's not just people. You see, our enemy, the devil, certainly doesn't care about us. He really just wants to use your desires to destroy you, to bring you to an end. And so Samson tells her a lie. He says, if I get tied with these 7 green cords, then I won't be able to get away. By the way, you might think 7 green cords, that doesn't seem like that would be enough to hold anybody. You might be surprised. When you get a chance, go home and wrap a thing of thread around your arm 7 times and try to get out of that. You're going to find that it's a little bit difficult. You're going to find that it has an effect on. Anyway, he told her 7 green cords. And of course, then she says to him after he falls asleep, this guy is a sleeper. I'm pointing something out to you. This is not normal for people to sleep like this. You say, why is he so sleepy and what's going on? I think there's a lot of drunkenness that's involved with this too. So he's asleep and the lords of the Philistines come and they tie Samson up. He doesn't wake up. I guess she tied him up in verse 8. He doesn't wake up. And there's guys in the chamber with her. Okay, he didn't notice them either. And she says to him, Samson, the Philistines are here. Oh, no. And Samson gets up and he breaks the cords and he beats them all up and gets away. Now, okay. So then he says, Delilah comes to him. Evidently, he came back. And Delilah says to him in verse 10, behold, thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith thou mightest be bound. Samson, it's not nice. You told me that if you were tied up with those, then that's the secret of your strength. And I thought you loved me. And you didn't tell me the truth. And so then he told her another lie. He said, well, if they find some ropes that no one has ever used for anything and bind me up really tight, then I'll be weak and I'll be like any other man. And so he went to sleep again. And she took new ropes and tied him up. And then she says to him, Samson, the Philistines are here again. Oh, no. And he got up and he broke the ropes and he beat them all up. And he won again. Now, are you starting to see a pattern here? And every time I've ever read Judges chapter 16, I'm thinking, Now that's coincidental that the Philistine showed up and he is bound by exactly what he told her the secret was that nobody knows. And later he's bound by exactly what the secret is that nobody knows. Either Samson is incredibly stupid or he's playing a game. And I don't believe he's stupid. I believe he's playing a game, which is exactly what many of us try to do with sin. We try to play a game. We say, well, a little bit won't hurt me. A little bit's not the same as an addiction. You know, it's not that big of a deal. I know that the church doesn't agree with it. I know that other Christians don't think it's okay. But you know what? I have liberty between me and the Lord. I can do whatever I want. It's no problem. And we become very foolish and we flirt with sin. And sin is deceitful. Now, as she's manipulating him and she's trying to get him to tell her the truth, she is also exploiting his known weakness. What is his known weakness? He likes women. He likes Delilah. He likes when Delilah talks to him this way. The lords of the Philistines had said, we want you to entice him. That word entice means to allure, to flatter, or to persuade. Sin will tell you, you know, you deserve something more. You're not getting a fair deal from God. God is not treating you the right way. Listen, you could be so much happier and you could have so much more if you would just give in this area of your life. And sin is lying to us. And that's exactly what's happening here. Delilah is lying to Samson. She's saying, oh, Samson, I really want to be with you. I really want to have a relationship with you. That's a lie. She doesn't want to have a relationship with him. She wants money. She wants Samson to be taken away, weakened, taken out of her life so that she can enjoy the riches that she's going to get from this. She is lying to him, and he is lying back, and he is lying to himself, which is another thing that happens to us when we get caught up in sin. We start lying to ourselves. We start telling ourselves, it won't happen to me. It could never affect me that way. Oh, I know, there's lots of examples of other people who got involved in that, and that's what happened to them, but it'll never happen to me. I can get away with it. And then we see through the passage, Delilah just doesn't give up. She is so persistent. She keeps asking. And then in verse 13, the third time, she asked him, now she's going to mock that she's offended. You've mocked me. You've made fun of me and you told me lies. I can't believe that you would do that to me. Okay, wait a second. If I'm Samson, I'm thinking, I can't believe that you would tie me up and then have Philistines hiding in the chamber to jump on me. There's something going on here that's not adding up. And she's persistent. She's asking him. So in verse 13, he gets a little closer to the truth. He says, take a loom and weave my long hair into that loom and secure it, and my strength will go away. Now, he's getting really close to the secret of his strength. And so, somehow, while he's asleep, a loom ends up in his hair. And she says, the Philistines are here. And he gets up and he beats them all up. And by this point, he still either hasn't figured it out or he thinks that he can beat this. And she comes back one last time in verse 15, and she really lays it on. How canst thou say I love thee when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. He evidently didn't give her an answer right away, because it says in verse 16, it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he finally told her the truth. She was persistent. Isn't it interesting how sin convinces us that we have to do that? I have to go after that. I have to live this way. I just can't live without that. And it is a big lie. It's all a lie trying to convince us that we can't live without something, when in fact, Satan knows very well that we could live much better without it. You know, lust is like this. Lust will convince you that you need something that you don't need at all. That's why covetousness is so dangerous, because covetousness, it's amazing how we can talk ourselves into things that we need. that we didn't need 6 months ago. We were getting along just fine until we discovered that it was a thing that we needed, and we talk ourselves into needing it. And, you know, that's how lust works in our life. Lust tells us you've got to have this. All I can see at this point in Judges 16 is how foolish Samson was to even stay in this place. The best thing he could have done was get out of that house and get back to Israel and never, ever, ever go back there again. There's a woman and some people there that want to destroy his life, and he's playing a game. Listen, brethren, it's not a game. It's not a game. Sin is not a game. You say, Pastor, why do you preach so hard against sin sometimes? Because I know this. Sin is going to destroy your life.
Right.
If you don't allow God to give you the victory in that area of sin, it's going to destroy your life. I get passionate about it because I know where it's going to take you. But you know, it's a lot easier for me to get passionate about sin in your life than about sin in my life. Because it's easy for me to convince myself that my sin's okay. It's not going to be a problem. I can handle it. I can get away with it. How foolish Samson was to stay in the place where he was, not to flee from temptation. All along in this story, Samson was evidently getting what he wanted from Delilah. She was evidently making him happy, and he enjoyed the time that he was spending with her. He was getting what he wanted. He was enjoying the pleasures of sin for a season. One writer called addictions a banquet in the grave. You know, it is like that. Not just addictions, but any area of lust that we indulge in. Anything that we go after, it's like we're going to a big buffet and gorging ourselves because we know that we're going to be killed the minute we walk out of the restaurant. So let me eat and enjoy and fill myself and make sure that I get everything that I want, because I know as soon as I step out of the restaurant, I'm done. Isn't that how many people are living? Except they're trying to check their mind away from going out the door. They're trying to pretend that that is never going to come. Every time that Samson revealed the source of his strength, supposedly Delilah would take advantage of what he revealed. But Samson doesn't seem to care that Delilah is trying to destroy his life. Why? Because Samson wants what Samson wants. Samson is in the most dangerous place that you could ever be. Convincing yourself that what you want is worth the incredible risk that you are running. Finally, we come down to the conclusion of the story, and you know how it ends. Delilah saw that he had finally told her what was on his heart. She called the Philistines, and she said, I know that he told me everything this time. I got him. Come on down and bring your money, because I got him this time. She made him go to sleep on her knees. He was enjoying being close to her, fell asleep on her lap. I don't know. She stroked his cheek. Oh, have a nice nap, sweetie. I love you. Off he went. She said, bring me somebody to cut his hair. Man comes with a razor, goes to work on his hair, cuts all of his hair off. And Samson says to him, oh, Samson, the Philistines are back. And Samson got up in verse 20. Look there. He awoke out of his sleep and he said to himself, I'll go out as at other times. This has never been a problem for me before. I've always been able to overcome this. I'm going to go out and shake myself, shake off the sleep, and then I'm going to let them have it and I'll be the victor again. He had no idea that the Lord wasn't with him anymore. He had no idea that he had lost the presence of the Lord. Now, wait a second. Did he know that he lost his hair? How could he have not known that he lost his hair? His hair was long. He had never cut it. His hair was gone. I'll tell you, I've had a beard for almost 15 years. If I were to shave my beard off, I would know my beard was gone, because it would make my face feel cold. You know, there's no way Samson didn't know his hair was gone. What he didn't know was that God was gone. You say, what does that mean? I think Samson had convinced himself that he could lose his hair and still have the power that he had before. I think he had talked himself into it. It's not going to affect me. I can do what I want. I can get away with it. I can sin with impunity and there will be no consequences. He had no idea that God was gone from him. And he went out there to show these guys what they had coming to them. He was really going to let them have it. And all of a sudden, he's got nothing. He's got nothing. In verse 21, the Philistines took him. Now, for 20 years, nobody's been able to touch Samson. Nobody's been able to do anything to him. And all of a sudden, they grab him. I wonder, and the Bible doesn't tell us what he thought at that moment, but I wonder if in that moment, when he went to show his great strength and his strength wasn't there, and the Philistines grabbed him, if he didn't say, "Uh-oh, I went too far." Listen to me. That is a terrible, terrible realization. When you realize, "I went too far. I was messing around with sin, and now I can't handle it anymore." Here's the newsflash. You never could handle it. Sin was just playing with you, and you thought you were playing with sin, but sin was in the driver's seat the whole time. Samson lost the presence of the Lord. He faced great destruction. In verse 21, the Philistines took him. And the first thing they did was they poked his eyes out. And you say, "That's terrible. What a horrible, horrible thing to have happened to him." I'm going to tell you, it's the best thing that could have ever happened to him. Why? Samson could not control what he looked at. He could not control his desires. The Philistines thought they were really going to do something bad to him, and they did him a favor. They took away what for him was the worst area of lust. They put out his eyes. I'm not saying that he enjoyed it, though. It's a terrible consequence of sin. Then they brought him down to Gaza. Where was Gaza? That's where he carried away the gates, remember? He had really showed them, and they said, "We're going to take you back to Gaza. We're going to show you." They put him in Gaza. They bound him up with fetters of brass, and they put him in the prison house grinding like he was an animal. And he would, all day long, he would push on a pole that was attached to a grinding wheel, and he would walk around and around and around. He couldn't see anything. He just walked around and around and around for day after day. And you see, where did Samson end up? Did he get what he wanted? No. Was he happy? No. He lost the power of God. He was in bondage. He was put in a place where he didn't want to be. He was not able to be victorious. Literally, Samson lost everything. And I can't help but think, as Samson walked around day after day around that circle, pushing the grinding wheel, if he didn't often say, "I wish I hadn't done it. I wish that I had paid attention. I wish that I had followed God's ways. I wish I hadn't sinned with arrogance against God. I wish that I would have just done what God said." Do you think he had any regrets in the prison house? Do you know, many people go down a path of sin, playing with sin. And then when the consequences come, they say, "I wish I had never done that. I wish I had handled it differently. I wish I would have made different decisions." But here's something I want you to understand. Once you get to that point, you cannot go back and undo it. You cannot make different decisions. Regrets are something that you can never undo. What a terrible situation Samson is facing in his life. What terrible regret he has, and it's all because of lust. So I say this to you this morning. Lust is very dangerous. Lust is something that will take you down a path that you don't want to go. And yet you and I have the same problem that Samson did, and that is that we are arrogant, we are impudent, and we think that we can defeat sin in the power of our flesh. We think that we can handle sin ourselves, that there's no way that sin is going to overcome us. We convince ourselves it could never happen to me, and that is the farthest thing from the truth. That's the oldest lie that Satan has been telling for thousands of years. And here's something that I think is so amazing. Satan uses exactly the same tactics today as he did in the Garden of Eden thousands of years ago. And you know why? Because we're so stupid, we can't see what he's doing until it's too late. We have to pay attention. He doesn't have to change his tactics because we willingly go along with it. We allow him to work in our life. Do you know this morning that sin can only be conquered in the power of God? Do you know that there is no victory that is possible for you outside of the grace of God in your life? Now, as we think about Samson, Samson is a strong man who is weak in this area of lust. But you know, there's another man in Scripture that's spoken about. And he's a man who from the outside looked weak and contemptible. Most of the world looked at him and they disdained him. They didn't think much of him. They thought, how could he be anything special? And yet this man, whom the world regarded as weak, is the strongest man of all. And Jesus Christ demonstrated in his life, though he was regarded with contempt by men, he showed that he had complete victory over the flesh. He showed that he could overcome sin, and Jesus Christ, in his perfect sinless life, went to the cross, and there on the cross, in his incredible strength, he took upon himself all of your sin and my sin. And there on the cross, as God the Father poured out upon him the righteous indignation that we deserve for our sin, Jesus Christ took that upon himself. He willingly drank the cup of God the Father's wrath. He said, I'll take it all. And do you know why he did that? He did that so that weak people like you and me could come to him in his strength and find deliverance from the sin that so easily besets us. We could find in Jesus Christ a rock of refuge from the temptation that so easily overwhelms us. All that Samson is not, Jesus is. And in Jesus, we can find the true fulfillment of all that we are looking for. It's amazing to me that as Christians, we are sometimes tempted and give in to the temptation to look for satisfaction in the world around us when God has so clearly told us that satisfaction can be found in Christ and Him alone. I don't know what it is this morning that you might be struggling with. I don't know what sin or temptation it is that you're grappling with in your life, but I know this, you don't have the power to overcome it, but Jesus does. And I want to urge you today to flee from that temptation and to run to the cross of Christ where you can find healing for your soul and refuge from the temptation that besets you in your life. Samson's not much of a hero. In fact, Samson is an awful lot like us and reminds us that we need a Savior. We need Jesus.